From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made at the end of the year. January 1st, 2021, the New York State minimum wage goes to $12.50 an hour in all parts of the state outside of New York City. The current minimum hourly wage is $11.80. Long Island and Westchester County will see their minimum wage rise to $14 from $13 an hour on December 31st. New York City sees no change. They've already got $15 an hour. These are planned increases that go back years, but in the middle of the pandemic, the National Federation of Independent Businesses says, slow down, hold off on the wage increase. The NFIB says a minimum wage increase will lead to even more businesses permanently closing during the pandemic. Workers tend to disagree. They see wage disparities that have gone on for decades. This hour, a conversation about the new minimum wage. Where we go next now, our guests include Greg Barilla, New York State Director for the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Greg, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Evan. I appreciate it.
And good to have Justin Wilcox, a brand new Unshackle Upstate Executive Director. Justin, welcome. He's a Munder County legislator as well. A lot of hats. Thank you, Justin. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
Also with us is Wren Reed, who is a local activist who has advocated for workers' rights. Wren, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Evan.
Harry Bronson is a New York State member of the Assembly. Assemblyman Bronson, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan, for having us on for this important conversation to help our families.
And Mr. Assemblyman, just for a little clarity, I'll start with you. These planned wage increases, they do go back years. It's part of sort of a built-in schedule, right?
Yeah, this is part of the legislation we did in 2016. We intentionally made the legislation so there would be incremental increases, in particular for upstate New York. And that would allow for businesses to plan and adjust for these increases. And so, you know, this has been in the works for almost 5 years.
All right. So let me start with Greg, because I saw NFIB's release on this, the concern that it's the pandemic. We're already seeing businesses close or scale back or lay people off. And I know you feel like this is going to make it worse. Why?
It's going to make it worse because the businesses are dealing, particularly small independent businesses that I represent, the local community businesses that we all know and love and define our neighborhoods. They are struggling like never before. Since March, small businesses in hospitality, retail, personal services, entertainment, lodging, those types of industries have been battered bloody. State required shutdowns, loss of consumer confidence, depressed national economy, and a reopening plan that has favored big box corporate entities over small independent businesses has put them in an incredibly difficult spot. The latest NFIB research indicates that 1 in 4, 25% of small businesses do not think they will make it 6 months from now under current economic conditions. Last month, it was 1 in 5. So our ask of the Department of Labor and the Department or the Division of Budget, as they come up with this analysis, was to recognize that we have to do everything in our power to improve the economic environment. We're not saying that the wage increases aren't going to go ahead. They were enacted in 2016, as the Assemblyman said. But in that law was put in sort of a break-the-glass scenario plan that if the economy were to go sideways, there is the ability to temporarily pause this if the upstate economy in particular was not able to withstand another increase. I cannot imagine any argument that says the economy has not gone sideways in the past 9 months.
All right. Justin Wilcox says Unshackle's new executive director. How do you see this issue?
Evan, I see it exactly the same way Greg does. But I would like to sort of go back to 5 years ago, right, when this was implemented and phased in, because, you know, frankly, the thought was that communities like upstate would have to adjust because we do have a different economy upstate than downstate. And we were already in a worse, you know, financial and fiscal situation in upstate New York. There was some wisdom in phasing it in. 5 years ago, we never knew we were going to be facing the crisis we're facing today. We have jobs leaving the area at a rate that we haven't seen in a long time. We have businesses closing at a rate that we have not seen since the Great Depression. So I would say, you know, in normal times, you know, the wisdom of a minimum wage increase, it's questionable. I'd say in during a pandemic, it's the essence, it's the height of stupidity. You know, and frankly, even the Department of Budget realized this when they're required under the law to produce a report. The Department of Budget also cast doubt on whether, you know, we can absorb minimum wage increases without adversely impacting the economy in the near term. So that's from the Department of Budget. They're saying, it's not just Greg and I, they're saying that they also believe this is going to have adverse impacts. Knowing that, I think, you know, one has to question the wisdom in going forward.
So let me ask, Rin, you know, I know you're someone who advocates for workers, and part of what Greg and Justin are saying is, if we do this, it won't help workers because there will be fewer people who will be workers. There will be more people out of a job. Does that concern you? Do you buy that, Rin?
I mean, I think a lot of this does have to do with stimulus from the federal government. I'm not going to make the case that things are good for small businesses or for workers right now. Obviously, we're in really trying times, but workers also can't afford pay cuts. We would have more money in the economy and stimulation from these small businesses if wages were increased. And frankly, like, we can expect that there will be more money for small businesses from the federal government. If you look at the stimulus from earlier in the year, businesses got almost double what people got in direct payouts. And from there, those businesses, 14% still closed. And that is bad, but they are going to get more relief than people will directly. So I think there's a responsibility of people to take on small business and entrepreneurship to pay their workers fairly. If they weren't able to pay them fairly, they probably should not have begun the business in the first place. I think that's a responsibility of business.
Okay, and I will definitely let Justin and Greg get to that point coming up here. But Rin, you sound confident at the very least that the federal government, the Congress, is going to pass something beyond what we have seen, I guess, in recent months, and even maybe just the $900 billion that's been talked about this week. You think there's more coming?
I don't think it has to be beyond what they've committed to before, but what they committed to before, again, it was double what they gave out in direct payments to people. So I just expect businesses to get a larger handout than people, and in that, responsibility falls on the businesses to allocate that appropriately, which would be in minimum wage increases.
All right, Assemblyman Bronson, a lot there, and I'd like you to start by responding to the idea that, you know, a minimum wage increase, as Justin Wilcox says, in sort of normal times, has been debated. In these times, in a crisis, is the height of stupidity. What do you think, Harry?
Well, when we passed this in 2016, you know, we had economists that had analyzed New York State's economy specifically and indicated that it was unlikely that would happen. And indeed, we've seen it. Right before the pandemic, the state achieved record low unemployment at 3.7% following 4 years of increases to the minimum wage. Historically, I've been involved in minimum wage since back in 2004, and you know, each time we've increased the minimum wage, it has not had an overall impact on the unemployment situation. So that's number one. But I would also recognize, look, as policymakers, you know, we have to balance policy to ensure the greatest public good, and in this case, families are struggling, and businesses are struggling too. But there's a way to help both. One is go forward with this minimum wage as planned for almost 5 years. That will help families provide for their loved ones. Will avoid, hopefully, you know, housing problems, food insecurity, the things that we see people going through today. But at the same time, we can help businesses. And we already have. First was the PPP from the federal government. Here locally, the county had its fast forward program. There were towns like the town of Rondacoy and the city as well who had packages to help small businesses. We're in conversations at the state level to look for state packages to help with rent relief, to help with possibility utilities, and the same kind of things that the PPP did. Currently under discussion, $900 billion federal stimulus, part of that package is a $300 billion small business assistance program. So there are ways to go forward with the minimum wage to help our families who are hurting, and at the same time, to help small businesses who are also hurting.
Okay. Let me ask Greg, does that move you at all, Greg?
You know, sure, there is probably and hopefully additional assistance coming from Washington. And I thank the Assemblyman for his efforts on some of those things that he discussed happening at the state level. And there has been some small, but I don't want to discredit the impact, but small local relief programs. But that, I mean, it is literally life support when New York State says you are not allowed to open, you are not allowed to operate. And then if you are allowed to open, take a gym, for example, in Monroe County all summer. You can only operate outside. That's it. So if that works for you, maybe you can make some money that way. And then we get to October and or September and October, you're allowed to go back inside at 33% capacity. And then, boom, orange zone. Sorry, you're closed again. These are the things that businesses are dealing with. And it's not just the minimum wage that I'm concerned about going up on the first of the year or the 31st of this year. It's other things like unprecedented increases in unemployment insurance premiums, perhaps as much as $1,000 per employee that businesses are going to have to pay. And that'll be announced sometime probably in February or March. We have a brand new paid sick leave program that's going to be implemented at the first of the year. These costs are adding up at a time when they cannot be afforded. The minimum wage increase is just the simplest burden that's coming down the pike that we can at least address for a period of time because we have this circuit breaker built into the law. If the economy is going sideways, state government through the DOB and Department of Labor has the ability to simply pause this. And if there was ever a time to do it, it has to be now.
So I'm going to get everyone to respond there, but I want to make sure Assemblyman Bronson hits that point. Is there any chance New York State's going to hit that pause button on this wage increase, Harry Bronson?
Yeah, I don't believe that's going to happen. Certainly, Greg and others are out there advocating for it. But I think that, the Department of Labor has articulated that it's important that we continue with the hike. It's based on historical data, but we know that the pandemic has thrown us a huge curve, but I'll go back to saying once again that, you know, we got to get through this together, and we will, and we will be stronger for it. But we have to make sure that we balance these things. We can't just say that we're going to take steps that are going to help small businesses that are then going to be at the detriment of workers or vice versa. So, you know, I get the point. These are hard times. We have hard choices ahead of us. I think that, we need to allow the minimum wage to go through. It's a 70 cents an hour increase here in the Rochester area. Businesses should have been planning for it. Granted, they got thrown a difficult curve, but our families did too. You know, there are workers out there who had full-time jobs who are now cobbling together part-time jobs. They have lost their hours. When the business is shut down, well, that hurts workers too. So, you know, I get that. That's why I think the focus needs to be to allow this to go forward. It helps our economy. It always has. That's one of the reasons where people are fighting for the family stimulus dollars, the $1,200 previously and now the $600 in the next package if it goes through. All of that is so that they can go out and buy necessities and take care of themselves. Well, that stimulates the economy. That's why every time we've had a recession or a downturn in the economy, every single president, whether they're a Republican or a Democrat, has always said, go out and buy consumer spending. So, you know, if we're going to help consumers go out there and spend, then they need these wages, and it helps their families as well.
All right, so let me get Justin and Rin on that point, because Justin, you have been concerned about the impact on small businesses. I know you've been in that arena yourself, and what the Assemblyman is essentially saying is, yeah, as a small business owner, you're going to be paying your employees a little bit more if you are paying the minimum wage, but the more money in their pocket, which equates to, if you're working 40 hours a week on minimum wage, it's about $1,100 a year more. What the Assemblyman is saying is that means more spending and more money coming back to small businesses like yours, more money circulating through the economy. We want money flowing. We don't want it stagnant and sitting in piles and places, and this helps it move. How do you see that, Justin Wilcox?
Well, I would agree with the Assemblyman that in normal times, that is an argument that could be made for an increase in the minimum wage, certainly. But here's my concern, is that we're in an environment where small businesses are closing at an unprecedented rate, right? A June report done by the NBER shows that, 41% of Black-owned businesses are not going to reopen. They have shut down, and these are startling figures. So, and right now here in New York, we're 28% below our January level in terms of the number of small businesses open in New York. So what I would say is, in normal times, that is a rational argument, one that I might disagree with, but it's a rational argument. I would say that this is completely irrational. What we are doing right now, the businesses that are barely able to stay afloat, the ones that have made it. So let's divide this into two categories, right? We have the ones so far that haven't. We have the ones that are just barely holding on. That's another category of business that we have here in New York State. These small businesses that figured it out, they're barely able to keep their doors open. And what does that mean? That means they can continue to employ people, right? So one of the things about helping businesses, and to the Assemblyman's point, one of the things about helping businesses is that they, by helping businesses, I hope we're not just helping businesses for the sake of helping businesses. The reason we help businesses is because they employ people. And to the extent that we can help these businesses keep their doors open, people will have money to spend. If we increase the minimum wage, certainly some people will benefit from that. But those who end up losing their jobs as a result, because, again, many of these businesses operate on razor thin margins, a 70 cent increase on a job that no longer exists is zero. So I'm very, very concerned about that. And I think at a time when, these businesses are struggling to stay afloat, unfortunately, we're, instead of throwing them a life preserver, we're actually giving them an anchor. And I think that's going to be the net effect here. We have seen, even in normal times, and most economists will tell you this, there are winners and losers. There are some people who are going to keep their jobs, and then there's going to be a significant portion of people who also lose their jobs. So, again, I think, unfortunately, in normal times, this would be a rational debate. Right now, I think it's a completely irrational debate.
All right. I'll ask Rin to respond to that, and I'll kick in a question or a comment that comes from one of Greg and Justin's predecessors at Unshackled. Brian Sampson sends this note. He says, what needs to be acknowledged is that the federal help are programs that are temporary. Minimum wage, paid sick leave, unemployment, workers' comp are permanent. We have to understand the overall impact of taxes and regulations versus looking at items in a vacuum. So I think Brian's responding to Rin's point that there's probably more help coming from the federal government, and there probably is. I mean, I don't understand how a federal government or how government itself can tell businesses you can only operate at 25% capacity, you've got to operate at 50% capacity, this business over here has to close entirely, but we're not going to help you at all. I mean, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and so where there probably is more help coming. But Rin, Brian is saying that help is temporary, these measures are permanent, and that makes it harder for businesses. What do you think, Rin?
Totally. I mean, I want to make a couple of points. And first, I'm a little disappointed, Justin, because it's my understanding that you did support earlier this year during your primary a continued schedule to the $15 minimum wage for New York State. So it's a little disheartening to hear that you're kind of backtracking on that, because this was in the height of COVID earlier in the spring. But to the second point, we, you know, workers' rights advocates, the Working Families Party, which I am part of, have been fighting for revenue increases for decades now. So there's just this false dichotomy set up by the capitalist class that the only answer to stopping the closure of small businesses is to not increase a wage by 70% that they're already paying at the minimum. Most small businesses actually pay above that and shouldn't be affected by this. But it's big box stores that pay the minimum wage who can't absorb these costs. But that, again, is all a false argument, because the fact is we've been fighting for sustained tax increases on the people who are making money during this pandemic and who can afford to take those hits. And that is the revenue that we're talking about that would be sustained and allow businesses to allow people and businesses to continue pushing for paid health leave and all of these other measures that we've already been pushing for with revenue.
And I want to correct. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rin. Go ahead.
It's just I believe it's a false dichotomy that's being set up.
Yeah, and I want to correct a little math that I had here. The 70-cent an hour increase in the minimum wage from 1180 to 1250 would result, if you're working 40 hours a week at the state minimum wage, it's $1,456 a year in an increase, not $1,100. My math is bad. I should never do math on the fly. But let me also allow Justin and Greg to respond to, and frankly, I think, you know, the Assemblyman as well. Some of Rin's comments earlier reflect a couple of comments here that I want you to hear from listeners. First of all, writing to us from Cuca Lake, here's Seth, who tends to have libertarian leanings. He's a small business owner on Cuca Lake. He owns the only place. He says, pay a minimum wage and be willing to accept a minimum effort. No, thank you. My business is seasonal. With a dozen on the payroll, all have made more than this for several years. I can't imagine not compensating at least this much an hour of someone's life. That's from a libertarian on Cuca Lake. And John in Webster wants to jump in on the subject of what we pay people as well. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Evan. It's a good show. I firmly believe that if a business can't pay, then the business should fold, if that's what's going to happen. But I really doubt that that will happen in most cases. The lowest wage earners, the beneficiaries and the lowest wage earners in this country, are black and brown people. And to me, keeping them down, people down, by lower wages is just slave labor. And I disagree with that. I might just firmly believe if a business can't pay and they're going to fold on that, then let them fold. Something new will come along. Mm. Thank you.
All right, John, thank you. So, okay, so Greg Berlow, there's really two points here. John is saying he doesn't believe that the minimum wage will actually lead to more businesses closing. And he's saying if businesses, and I think Rin made the point and Seth made the point, if you can't pay at least this wage or more, shouldn't be in business to begin with. Hit those two points if you could, Greg.
Sure, and there's a third I'd like to touch upon as well. To some extent, understand that argument, but as has been the points been made ad nauseum throughout this conversation, that these are not standard times. These businesses are hanging by an absolute thread. I have not advocated in the past couple of days or weeks, as we've begun this discussion, about the potentiality of pausing the minimum wage increase for it not to move forward as scheduled, but to pause it under these very, very, very difficult times. And Bryn mentioned it before Seth did, that most small businesses do pay above this. Most of my members pay above minimum wage. That is absolutely true. There are some that don't on certain occupations and certain jobs done in the workplace. Those businesses operate on razor-thin margins, and they are in jeopardy of closing. And to earlier points made, 70 cents more an hour doesn't mean anything if you don't have a job. But I also want to touch upon what Bryn brought up regarding big box retail, because I think that is a big part of the story that doesn't get accurately told. And I think it's actually an area of agreement to some extent. Big box retail is who really pays these wages and uses them to their advantage far more than my members. And it's interesting that big box retail was the only major business group in the state in 2016 that didn't oppose this. They actually supported it. because they have the ability to absorb additional cost, to do scheduling alterations. They have sort of an economy of scale within these huge organizations that small businesses don't. So what you see oftentimes, you're seeing it during this pandemic, you're going to see it after this pandemic, is the Home Depots of the world will survive, and it's the hardware store up the street that won't. And we've seen a preferential treatment for these big box retailers throughout this pandemic, where my members in the retail space, forced to close, forced to go under additional and draconian restrictions, while big box retailers like Walmart were deemed essential throughout because they sold a certain amount of food. I think it's interesting to point out there is an element of agreement if you were coming at it from a different angle here. Unfortunately, these sorts of things punish the small independent businesses far more than anybody else.
I'm glad you bring that up, because we actually have a couple of listener points on that, and I do want to know if the rest of the panel agrees that this is generally better for big business, worse for small biz. Catherine writes to us. Catherine says, raising the minimum wage is tough on small businesses with long-term employees. If they raise the starting wage, they need to raise others along with it to reward longevity in the company. That adds up fast. Then consumers will complain that prices have gone up. Big business can absorb this. Small businesses can't. And Dustin says, I'm pretty liberal and also not a small business owner, but I think we all know the answer. The minimum wage needs to go up, but small biz will struggle, and large corporations, who are the actual culprits of not sharing wealth, will absorb the cost just fine. This is sad. Greg, can you comment on what Catherine and Dustin said? Does that line up with your thinking there?
It's an unfortunate reality. And then where does the money that is generated at a small business stay? It stays local. Something like 65% of every dollar recirculates around the economy. I don't think that's true with Best Buy. I don't think that's true with Target. And those are the businesses, unfortunately, throughout this pandemic and policies being implemented that we're discussing right now, will be given another competitive advantage over a local, neighborhood, community-oriented business.
Assemblyman Bronson, are you worried about that, that this policy that you've supported will end up leading to more economic concentration and more kneecapping of the small businesses?
I don't believe that's the case. And the reason is, we've heard all these arguments when we've had this debate before. We heard them in 2016 when we ultimately passed the law. Yes, a significant change, COVID-19 and the economic downfall as a result. I get that. But at the end of the day, that's where the supplements from the federal government and from local governments, and hopefully we'll do something in the state in our budget coming up, that's where those subsidies are to come into play and counter the impact of COVID-19. Because of COVID-19, the policies that the minimum wage increase was all about, that hasn't gone away. And in fact, it's been made worse. And that is, minimum wage is an attempt to address poverty. It's an attempt to address income inequality across the state. It's an attempt to address the disparity of workers of color. And in this situation, we can't just say, because we're facing the most significant health crisis that we'll face in our lifetime, that we have to put all that other stuff aside. We can't do that as policymakers, and I don't think we can do that as a society. So for me, the balance here is go forward with the minimum wage. It's been planned for by these businesses. They should have those plans. Those plans are still in place. They should be. Where we need to make the adjustment is the assistance programs that we're working on at the federal, state, and local government level.
You are a small business owner, Harry Bronson, a coffee shop in Rochester. Are you worried that this is better for Dunkin' Donuts and worse for Equal Grounds of the world? Are you worried about what you can pay your employees?
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that difference. I appreciate that difference. As a small business owner, I'm struggling, and we will continue to struggle, but we'll struggle in a way that is helpful for our workers, who we consider family, as well as continuing our business. And, I get the concerns. I have had a lot of sleepless nights over the last 8 months, and will continue to do so as a business owner. But at the same time, that doesn't deter me from the important policy of increasing the minimum wage.
Well, and Justin Wilcox, to be fair, I want you to have a chance to respond to what Rin said about your campaign earlier this year. Have you changed your mind on where the state minimum wage should be?
Well, Evan, you and I talk quite a bit about, you know, this and other issues. And one of the things is, I told you I was a data-driven person, right? So, you know, the more and more data we've had come in on the effects of this pandemic on our small employers, it really indicated to me, and frankly, to even, the, like I said, the Department of Budget now says that this is going to have adverse impact on our economy. So, look, again, we go back to this idea, and thank you for letting me respond, Evan, I appreciate that. But we go back to this idea, and I appreciate the Assemblyman sentiment here, because I think it's sincere. I know it's sincere. I know Assemblyman Bronson, and I know he's sincere that he believes this is a tool to address poverty alleviation. It is not a good tool for addressing poverty alleviation. Every economist will tell you that the best tool for addressing poverty alleviation is what? Earned income tax credit, workforce training, right? Because that's where, with respect to earned income tax credit, we know where that money is going. We know that is going to those in poverty. With the minimum wage, what we also know about the minimum wage is that most of the workers who earn a minimum wage were not from poor families. We know that because the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports on this. They report on who receives those wages, right? And so we know that 10% of the workers earning the minimum wage came from households with an annual income of more than $150,000, and 5% from households earning more than $210,000. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, while I completely believe that the Assemblyman's intent here is to alleviate poverty, this is probably the bluntest instrument we could possibly use. I think from a public policy perspective, if we really want to address, and it's really our intent to address poverty, we have to take a serious look at EITC and workforce training, right? Because these were never really meant to be lifetime jobs. At minimum wage are entry-level jobs. And frankly, the data still bears that out. Most people working in these jobs, it is entry-level. But for those who are stuck for a number of reasons, right, because of our failures in education policy, or because we basically don't have an economy that's working for everybody, we need to put more resources into workforce training so those people aren't stuck or tethered to a job that is meant for entry-level workers. So, you know, again, I appreciate the sentiment, but it's simply not the fact that this is a good way to do that.
All right. I want to not only in our last 20 minutes or so allow the Assemblyman to respond to that. I'd like him to hit Greg Barilla's point from earlier this hour that unemployment insurance, paid sick leave, sort of has set the stage to make this harder, in his view, even harder, a minimum wage increase. We'll let the Assemblyman get there. I've got to get a phone call from Teresa in Webster coming up after the break. So, Teresa, hang there if you could. I've got more emails if we've got time. We're talking about New York State's minimum wage, which goes to $12.50 an hour outside of New York City from the current $11.80. That happens at the end of this year. And NFIB, among other business groups, have said to state government, pause this. Not now. Not during the pandemic when things are in crisis. Other leaders, including members of the Assembly, workers' rights advocates, have said this has been a scheduled increase for years because there's been so much disparity and workers need a shot. So that's what we're talking about here with Justin Wilcox from Unshackle Upstate, Greg Barilla from NFIB, Harry Bronson's a member of the New York State Assembly, Rin Reed is a local activist who advocates for workers' rights, and we're going to take that break and come right back to your feedback next.
I'm Megan Mack. Monday on The Next Connections, a group of Brighton residents has successfully revoked racist property deeds in their neighborhood. The deeds dated back to 1929 and contributed to segregated housing patterns. We talk with the residents of the Meadowbrook neighborhood about their work and about how other neighborhoods can revoke racist property deeds. Then in our second hour, TV and film 2020. What was the best? What was the worst? Talk to you Monday.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Bob Johnson Chevrolet, proud supporter of Connections with Evan Dawson, believing an informed public makes for a stronger community. BobJohnsonChevy.com.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Teresa and Webster. Go ahead, Teresa.
Hi, Evan. I just wanted to preface this with that I am a small business owner, but I went to school for labor rights, and I have a passion for workers' rights. Part of the reason I started my business is because I wanted to treat people differently. And so I vote Working Families and Green, and that's how I feel about workers. But at the same time, I own a small business, and this is a crazy time to do this. It's really unfair. Like, we went years and years without increases to minimum wage, and to pile this all on at this time. I'm happy that it went up the last 4 years. By the way, I increased my people's wages regularly. But like another person already said, if we increase our bottom, we have to increase our top, because it's a small business. They have 5 employees. They know kind of what each other makes. It's not a secret. And to address a couple of the other points that were made already that kind of upset me, caused me to call, was the small businesses haven't gotten very much as a way of aid. PPP coming from the federal government is a forgivable loan, not actual aid. Like, it hasn't even been forgiven yet. Let's start there. Like, it hasn't even been forgiven yet. So right now I have an outstanding loan, and that's not aid. If you want cash, or if you want businesses to do this kind of thing, they should be getting the government aid to come first. We, like, not say, oh, I'm sure it's coming, but why don't you give your people more money first? Like, that's kind of like the egg before the chicken or something. That's the wrong order, the cart before the horse, whatever you'd like to call it. And if you want to keep money moving in the economy, I applaud that, but you should be going after the owners of Amazon and the big box store owners and everything else. Those are the people hoarding wealth, not small business owners. Like, I don't make as much as sometimes my minimum wage employees because I get paid last. So, I mean, I think there is a best of both worlds here, and that would just be to structure the law, either pause it, because it is written into the law that it could be paused. And no one can argue that the economy didn't go sideways in the last year. That's kind of impossible. But you could also just structure the law to go after the big box stores that purposely hold the wage at minimum, or the McDonald's or the Wendy's or anything like that, and not structure it to go after locally owned businesses. So that's kind of my rant. Sorry about that, but I mean, I've been listening and making notes.
No, I appreciate it, Teresa, and thank you very much for the phone call, and good luck to you. I appreciate it. I know you're going through some hard times. Thank you for the phone call. You've given us a lot to talk about, and I want to hear from everybody. I'm going to start with the assemblyman, because is there any way to structure a law that says, hey, if you have fewer than 100 employees, fewer than 50, whatever the level is, Harry Bronson, then the minimum wage doesn't impact you. But if you're a big box, if you've got a larger number, then it does. I mean, is that possible, and was that ever a consideration here?
I think it is possible. We do that certainly in the anti-discrimination laws. We have different policies for the different size and number of employees. I'm thinking it's possible. I don't know for sure, but I think so. And you know, to Teresa's point, though, you know, I fully appreciate what she's going through. And, you know, the forgiving of the PPP loan. You know what the standards are on whether or not you're going to be allowed to forgive it using a 24-week period or 8-week period, whichever you choose. And you have to use a certain amount in connection with payroll and things of that nature. So, you know, the parameters of the forgiveness are out there, even if the forgiveness hasn't happened. So you should be able to do the calculation with your lending institution and figure out if you're going to be able to make the application for the forgiveness of
okay.
that loan.
And Rin, interesting to hear Teresa say she votes green, that she's really invested in labor rights. But this feels like kind of a penalty to small business, where she feels like the emphasis that government should be having when it comes to wages and worker rights should be at the Amazons of the world, the big boxes, not her, not right now. What do you think, Rin? Hey, Rin, unmute if you're on mute.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know how that happened.
Hey, that's life in a pandemic. Go ahead.
I know, right? I mean, I think she really got to my greater point of this kind of being a false dichotomy. I mean, the Working Families Party and other groups have been working towards raising revenue and taxes for a really long time, and that's never happened. That's never been the priority of these small business advocate groups, but that's really where we could have made a lot of difference and given subsidies to small businesses, especially in the time when we're asking them to close. So her point about going after the Amazons of the world and these big box stores, yes, we should be, but I don't think it's necessarily at the cost of workers' rights and their ability to raise their wages.
All right. Greg Barillo, what do you make of Teresa's phone call?
I mean, I think I should interview her for some talking points at NFIB, because that's exactly what we talk about all day, is the challenges that small independent businesses are facing like hers. And I think she said she had 5 employees and trying to make payroll. And, you know, PPP program, it was a success in many respects. It got money out the door quickly. It did provide a life-saving line for small businesses. But what you could use that money on was very structured. It didn't work for all types of businesses, depending on where your overhead came from. The forgiveness process is underway right now. 90% of small businesses that have received PPP, 90%, do not have that money anymore. It has been spent in the manner required by federal law. So if you are a restaurant, or if you are personal care services, if you are in fitness, you are continuing to operate right now under these extreme restrictions. In many cases, you've had to change your entire business model. PPP was meant to support you for, I don't know, a couple of months. And now we are deep into this pandemic and the pandemic-related recession. There isn't exactly an end in sight, although I'll be the first to admit the vaccination news is really positive, and hopefully that continues to be rolled out in New York and across the country. But this is 9 months now, and here we have an opportunity to look ahead. We see a required cost increase coming down on small businesses, and we have a mechanism in place. We don't have to rewrite any laws. We don't have to have a special session back in Albany. There's a mechanism in place to just pause this cost increase while we figure out what's going on with the economy, how long this is going to last, and what the damage is. I think that's a perfectly reasonable and responsible approach, given these dire circumstances.
Justin Wilcox says, the Unshackle Upstate Executive Director, you know, Rin and others have made the point that there have been big wage disparities in workers who work long hours and still struggle for a long time in this country. And, I know you have said that you care very much about those disparities. It's a question of how you create success at all levels. What do you think has created wage disparities most in this country, Justin?
Evan, that is an incredibly great question. You know, if you look at what's created wage disparities, unfortunately, I think part of it is, frankly, you go back to Reagan. I hate to say it. You go back to Reagan and look at some of those really regressive tax cuts. What those did is they really shifted burdens and placed an onus on, again, and what we've seen governments do is place more and more of a burden on our smaller businesses, our taxpayers. In upstate New York, what you've seen is, a loss of population, a loss of jobs, because what government's been trying to do is do more with less, and frankly, that's just not feasible, right? You can't keep imposing all these costs on the people that create jobs. You cannot continue to do that and expect at the end of the day that's not going to have an impact. So sort of going back to be a little bit more specific, what we have is disparities in sort of our public policies, right? So we have this one size fits all minimum wage increase, for example. And so how are those big box stores going to react? Those big box stores are going to, at the end of the day, invest in technology because they can afford it. And that's what they've done, right? The data bears this out. They can afford it, so they invest in technology. And at the end of the day, there is less jobs because of that. There's less of these jobs. And again, the smaller businesses, those community-based businesses, they're forced to compete with those companies, and they can't compete with those companies. It's not a level playing field. So I guess what I'm saying is so much of this goes back to sort of poorly structured policies on the federal level that date all the way back to, frankly, Ronald Reagan. And so it's not as if it started today or it started yesterday or that it's Cuomo's fault or that's Pataki's fault. These are policies that we've been putting in place for 30, 40 years that really aren't addressing the major issues here, right? And as our economy has failed to serve people, we have not been investing, and as we've had more of a globalized economy, we have not addressed workforce training. That is a huge, huge issue. And as far as EITC goes, we really ought to be looking at that as a more precise tool rather than this blunt instrument, which I think, frankly, is just going to have those adverse impacts that the Department of Budget indicated in their report. I think what we're going to see is this blunt instrument chasing more jobs out of New York State. And that's something, frankly, the only reason that our unemployment rate isn't higher in upstate New York is because we've seen an exodus of people. So I would argue this is unsustainable. And right now, these types of minimum wage increases, additional burdens that we're placing on small businesses, they can't absorb it. The larger businesses, they'll absorb it. They'll invest in the technology because we've just made it cheaper for them to do it. And again, most studies already show that this is exactly what those big box stores do.
All right. Well, let me get Gary and Wes Bloomfield, and then I'll let all of our guests make some final thoughts here. But go ahead, Gary. I know you've been waiting.
Well, I've just been listening to the last speaker there, and I totally agree. I think he's got a lot of points there. I had a couple of things. One is that it is not the businesses that are the job creators, especially not big businesses. It's the consumer. I don't know of one business that would hire a single person or make a single product if they didn't have consumers to buy it. So that's the first point. The other thing is minimum wage is a blunt instrument, but one of the biggest problems I see is that, especially these big box places, when they use government services to supplement their wage payments. They'll give them applications for food stamps and Social Security and all that. I mean, social services and stuff. What I would propose is on the federal level, any employee who applies for or receives any federal services or state services, that the cost of those services are put onto the business.
Well, and Gary, I got to jump in here and let our guests respond because we got about 45 seconds apiece for them to respond to some of what you've had to say and maybe make some final thoughts. I'll go up the panelists. Rin Reed, first up. Go ahead, Rin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I completely agree with that point and just the fact that businesses should be responsible for keeping people on minimum wage and not being able to pay their bills. But I just wanted also to go back to Justin's point about like where this inequality comes from. And it's absolutely true that it was irresponsible tax cuts, but it also comes back to a lack of supporting workers' rights and unions. The lack of union power under Reagan and the undercutting of workers' ability to make fair wages is what's led to the inequality today. So pushing for that exact thing to fix inequality doesn't make any sense. So when we're talking about irrationality, I think attacking the minimum wage and minimum wage increases is actually what is irrational at this point in time.
All right, Justin Wilcox, you got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, the only thing I would say on that is, frankly, I'm in agreement with the Department of Budget, right? I'm in agreement with the economists. I'm not making an emotional argument. I think it's easy to make an emotional argument and say, COVID pandemic be damned. we're going to go forward with this, even if it's bad for the economy. And that's exactly what the Department of Budget says. And that's what I'm saying. I think this is the wrong move at the wrong time for the economy. It's just going to hurt workers. It's not going to help workers.
Greg Barilla from NFIB, about 45 seconds, closing thoughts. Keep it tight. Go ahead, sir.
Certainly. I will close on a high note. The assemblyman I've known for a number of years, Rhea and I have not had the opportunity to meet. But I would like to say that even though we disagreed on this issue, and I disagreed with the assemblyman on a number of issues, back when we were allowed to open doors and meet face-to-face, the assemblyman has always been open. He and his office has always heard of my perspective of my members. That's not as common as you might think across elected officials. So I want to thank him for that. I look forward to seeing him in the new year. And everybody listening, we have a couple of days left of the shopping season. Please shop small, shop local, find a way to support your local restaurants, your local retail during this critically important time. Thank you.
45 seconds, Assemblyman Bronson. Final thoughts. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, Greg, for that comment. And I learn the most from people who disagree with me. So it's important for me to have those conversations, and I will continue to do so. And I will echo your comments. Please shop locally. Go out there, go to your small businesses on your streets across the city, across this county. You're going to be helping small businesses to do that. I want to protect workers. I want the minimum wage to go up this December 31st. But at the same time, I'm also going to work to try to help out our small businesses.
The minimum wage scheduled to go outside of New York City from $11.80 to $12.50 at the end of this year. And our thanks to Assemblyman Harry Bronson. Thanks for making time, Assemblyman.
Thank you, Evan.
Rin Reed, a worker rights advocate. Thank you, Rin. Always good to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you, too, Evan. Thanks.
Justin Wilcox, executive director of Unshackle Upstate and a member of the legislature in Monroe County. Justin, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Evan.
Greg Barilla, New York State Director for the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, as always.
Hope everyone has a warm and happy weekend. And our thanks go out to the engineer, Rob Braden, Megan Mack, producer, and I'm Evan Dawson, thanking myself. I'm not going to thank myself. I just host this show. But I will thank you for listening, and we will talk to you Monday in member-supported public radio.